Hallo, zum letzten Mal jetzt hier auf der XPC 2016. Wir haben noch einen Vortrag zum Thema User Experience und Timothy Ahumba is coming from Nigeria and lives in some other countries, and now he's working for Wunderlist, and Wunderlist is a very special interesting app for task management app, and I've seen that they have very different targets to get them, and So it's very interesting to know how Wunderlist is doing all how can target them consistently, and that's your talk, I think.
Yeah, basically, yeah.
So yeah. He is lead designer of Wunderlist, so mm-hmm. He has the experience to tell you more about wonderful things.
Yeah, thank you so much. Yeah, so I'm gonna talk a little bit about what it's been like so far in the last about 4 years building Wunderlist and building the experience across multiple platforms, and sort of our journey of taking an app that was initially built on Titanium and now on 10 or even more than 10 different platforms natively. So a little bit of introduction about me and myself. I like you said, I'm from. I grew up in the UK. Moved over to Berlin about four years ago to work for Wunderlist, and been there ever since. Right now, I'm leading the design team, working mostly on like core experiences, defining the look and feel of the product, and sort of translating that across many different platforms. So Wunderlist, if you don't know what it is, it's a cross-platform to-do list app. Lets you manage your tasks and share lists with colleagues and friends, and really collaborate in that sense as well. Has files and comments and other features like this. Like I said, it's sort of a talk about what it takes or what are the key takeaways we've had over the past 4 years building this app, and something I could share that might help if anyone wants to try and emulate us or build cross-platform experiences that really feel friendly, feel consistent, and that people also really enjoy and love. So a little bit of history about Wunderlist and where we've been so far. We started about 2011. We built Wunderlist was basically like a tech demo, and it was built on one single JavaScript code base based on Titanium, the framework. And about a year later, we then shipped native clients. We shipped a Windows, a Mac, web, and iPhone, Android app. Later on, we worked on the tablets. We shipped two tablets about a few months later. Then worked on the version number 3, which took about another year to build. So we basically redeveloped and rebuilt the apps from the ground up again. We weren't really happy with the technology and the back end, and so we thought we'll maybe try again, rebuild it from scratch, and really build a strong foundation for the future. And then about 6 months later, we got to work with Microsoft on making a Windows 8 app, a really native Windows 8 app. And this is when they sort of released and were working on the new modern design, Windows 8, sort of the tiles and that experiences. And we got to really take a stab at figuring out how to move Wunderlist with the whole experience in that very, very different and unique UI. And then a few months later, the watch came out, and we got to tackle that as well and see how to transport Wunderlist onto wearables and figure out how it works on there. And then finally, kind of really where we're at right now is this modern design, and we redesigned Wunderlist again and took a more modern approach to figure out what things can we strip away now that Wunderlist has sort of evolved over the last 4 years. What are the things that we can keep? What are the things that our users are now used to? What is happening in the industry that we can now take cues from? So over the last kind of 4 or 5 years, we've learned a whole lot about building products, and it's been quite an exciting experience, but there's definitely a lot more to learn, a lot more to experience and to figure out. So like I said, when we started working on Wunderlist, it was basically a tech demo. It was just a 6-week project to try and figure out and to try and show investors what we could do. We actually had our I sat on a different product, one called WonderKit, which was basically a much fully featured project management tool that was very collaborative, that had some social features as well. But unfortunately, that didn't work out, and we were forced to kind of come back and rethink the things that we had, and maybe figure out maybe what can we do to stay strong as a company, what can we do to continue living as a startup. So we took what we knew, we took what was kind of already successful. Wonderlist was around for about 7 to 8 months, and it was already reached over 1 million downloads, and we were growing, and so users really loved it. So we thought, maybe we'll take this, let's double down on it, let's actually make it better. And so we tried to figure out what would it mean to make it better. And we thought, maybe we go native. And so we thought, okay, we take this app that is built mainly on Titanium, based on one code base, and we go native and build out like multiple different clients. And we thought, how can we do this, and how can also keep the same experience across all platforms? So here are some of the things we thought about when we decided to really go native. We thought, okay, performance. We get to really use the hardware and resources, graphics card, the CPU, for example. And we would actually get to create a really good experience using native gestures, for example. And it would really feel intuitive on each platform. Also, we would have way more access to SDKs and tooling that each platform would provide with Xcode or even Android Studio. And each app would be decoupled from each other, meaning there will be no shared code. So there won't, if a bug was in one app, it wouldn't spread across all the different clients. And actually, we would actually get a lot of support from the app stores at that time, in around 2011, 2012. The iPhone has been around for about 4 years then, and Apple and Google were really pushing for native apps inside the store, so we would get a lot of support, and we got a lot of support over the years because our apps were native, and they would use a lot of the native features that they would release. And I think the most important thing was offline. We really, really wanted to make sure that the app would work offline. We would be able to use it when you're in a grocery store, for example, with zero connectivity. You can check off your list, you can add stuff to it, and you wouldn't have to worry about if it's there or if it's syncing or if it's not. And when you would return back to the internet, it would just be synced online. So, like, all these different things came together, and sort of like we made the decision that this would actually be great. This is actually would make the product better. So we took a stab at building native clients, and frankly, we have never ever done that before. We didn't actually know how to do it. So we sort of went to what we understood. We knew iOS and Mac. Most of the designers and developers at the company were iOS or Mac and Mac users, so we started there. We started with the Mac app and the iOS app. We designed those specifically for those and for those platforms to see how they would work, how they would feel, and then took that and translated it over to like the web and to Windows and Android as well. And what we sort of noticed was everything looked the same. So this is the Mac app, and this is the Windows app, and it's very hard to see the difference. This is Wonderlist 2 when we first launched, and you can see actually right up there in the top right corner is the difference. It's just we move the window control buttons to the right, and even though the app was native, it didn't feel native. It didn't feel at home on the platform, and it was a starting point, and it was fine. But I think we quickly realized that we couldn't end up this place. This couldn't be where we stopped. So we had to go further and really figure out what's the next step and how can we make this feel more at home on each platform. So we really wanted to start by understanding each platform. All the team were iOS and Android iOS and Mac users. So I took it upon myself to commandeer an Android phone, take one home, and I started using it for a month. And I noticed a lot of differences between each platform. Even though they were both mobile devices, even though they sort of had the same form factor, they would be used in the same context. They actually had very, very different experiences. So Over the month, I sort of used it as my primary device with answering phone calls, text messages, using the native experiences to try and figure out what the developers of the OS have done and what decisions they made, and to try and really figure out how to make a great experience, which is very specific to each platform. Something I noticed on the Android device was this long press interaction. So you'd long press on an element inside any app mostly, and it would trigger an edit mode, which is very unique to Android. This wasn't the same on iOS, and I think understanding like paradigms and interactions like this helped us really figure out how to build really great products. So like we sort of thought, then, you know, designing a platform for a platform you really have no or like little understanding about is kind of like building a house when you don't really know what materials you'd be building with, or you don't even know the ground that you're building it on. We were basically designing blind for the first 6 to 9 months, and we knew that this had to change. And by understanding the core experiences and the core interactions actually allowed us to build way better apps that felt really at home on the device and familiar to the users of each platform. So now this is something that we could now transfer and take across every single app we would build from there. So now we understood a little bit of each platform and each device we'll be building on. I think the next step was for us to try and figure out really who and what Wunderlist was. What was the core of Wunderlist? What's the core experience of Wunderlist? So we asked the question, what makes Wunderlist Wunderlist? We looked at the different UI elements, we looked at the different like theming and all the things that we saw across all the platforms, and we decided on a few things that we felt like this is the core of Wunderlist. These are the things that make Wunderlist the same. And we had to ask these questions when we were working on the new Windows 8 app, the one that I was talking about earlier. This new experience that has been very different from all the other Windows versions, like compared to Windows 7 or even Windows XP. The similarities in terms of the UI was quite similar to Mac. It was basically like files and folders, and it was sort of clicking the menu bars and things like that, which were very, even though the design was very different, the sort of experience was sort of the same. But when Microsoft launched Windows 8 and with the tiles and the sort of flat UI, it made us really rethink and try and figure out what is the core of Wunderlist. How can we translate this this design and this experience that is sort of already defined in this design and take that to a new platform, to a new OS completely. So and in the middle, in the beginning, it was actually quite difficult. We didn't really understand what we were doing and how to really make this happen. But after a while, we sort of then understood that we had to go back and figure out the core. So there are a few things that we found that sort of were important across all the different platforms that we felt that without this, the app wouldn't feel the same, and without these, the app would lose its sort of consistency and experience. So backgrounds, the customization of the app, allowing the user to really make it their own. Hierarchy, for example, in terms of the navigation. So we would start with on the left side, it would be like lists, and then in the middle would be tasks, and then the right would be detail view. And this is something that we kept consistent, even in the mobile client. You would start in the sidebar, move to lists, and then move to the details. And I felt that was something that we felt without this, the app would feel like a completely different experience. And last was the sounds, and we spent some time engineering different sounds that would be unique to the app, would sort of evoke a particular emotion that we felt would be unique to Wunderlist. So these three things we took, and we realized that by sort of understanding and figuring out what these are, we could definitely ensure that no matter what the design was, no matter what the platform it would be on, it would still sort of be the same experience that we knew that our users really loved. So we took these three things, went back to work, and started working on the app. And sort of ended up with this. And so if you look at it now, it looks very different from our other platforms. It basically, it's very flat. There's no shadows. There's no like paper textures that we heavily used in the past to try and evoke the motion of evoke the memory of paper and to really get that idea across. Here it's very clean, it's very flat. We use different colors. There was definitely now there's no task cells. It's all on a background. So these are even though they looks very different from the one that people knew in the past, it still felt like it was built by the same company. It still felt like it had the same feeling and experience. And that was because we figured out some of the core things, like the backgrounds, like the hierarchy, but also things like the icons and the pictograms that you see here that were drawn by us in house, and the sounds as well. So taking this, moving forward, we were able to now really understand the principles and the core principles of Wunderlist. And I think what it really did was it freed us so much to explore new things, knowing that we had these constraints that we could stay in. We could explore and figure out where we could go. And it was actually quite fun. And also we could then translate this to new platforms, platforms that haven't even existed yet. As long as we knew the core of our product, it didn't matter where it would be on. It would always feel unique and always feel special and Wunderlist-like. So after having like the experience and knowledge of each platform and now figuring out as well what Wunderlist was and who it was and what sort of the character, we then decided to take this and make it sort of like a formula, like a recipe. So understanding the platform, understanding the experience, putting this together sort of was like the ingredients we needed to continue on, making sure that everything that we built would be native feeling, but also Wunderlist completely. So we didn't really focus only on the hows and the whats, why and how people use the app and use the platform, or we've actually focused more on the why. So why are things a certain way? Why do people click this over this other button? And figuring out the why helps us really understand which rules are really important, which rules are sort of paramount to feel native and to feel at home on a platform, and which ones can be broken and changed and manipulated to feel more native or feel more Wunderlist-like, sorry. So we realize sometimes some of these existing paradigms and existing experiences didn't really fit what we were trying to create. Sometimes we wanted to make things that hadn't even existed yet on any of the platforms. So we had to think of creating our own paradigms, creating our own experiences that would then possibly be new standards across all these platforms. So one example is our detail view. So this is Wunderlist 2 on the Android phone, and you can see we have the three hierarchy navigation. On the far right, you see the detail view, and this is something new that had never existed before on any of these mobile platforms. Was like this, like view that would come in about maybe like 90% of the screen. To still give you context of where you are, but also provide a lot of information, a lot of detailed information. And the real goal was to sort of keep our three-pane hierarchy, was to sort of also enforce the paper metaphor that we had, like a sheet of paper that you just put on top of your tasks, and also allow our users to quickly move between the detail view all the way to the sidebar with just simple two swipes. You didn't have to click any buttons. You didn't have to navigate anywhere. You could just easily swipe. And this is something that didn't exist before, so we decided to make this and make this consistent across all our devices and the platforms we supported. So, I mean, we questioned existing paradigms, even ones that didn't existed yet. We also pushed boundaries, and we really wanted to ensure that the product would be better, would be easier to use, and actually would be a lot more fun. So let me just kind of wrap up a little bit more of what I've been sharing. Like, the four things I think that are important to really building great products. Start with what you know. Start with the things that you already have in your hands. You don't have to know it all to begin with. I think it's good just to start and figure out as you go along. get to know the platforms you're working with. So if you started building stuff for Android and also iOS, don't just assume that it will just work and it'll be easy. Actually, spend time, get to know the platform. If you don't, you'll be sort of shooting blind or you'll be designing blind. And define the core experiences and the core values of your product. What are the elements that really make your product like yours? What are the things that will be consistent across all devices, no matter where you are, no matter the context? And sometimes break those rules. Break the rules that you think don't encourage or don't help your product get better. The best experience wins. So if you find an experience that actually works better for you and for the product that you're trying to build and it sort of fits the core, then it doesn't matter. Break it, and I'm sure it would always end up with a good result. So I want to sort of talk a little bit about the future, and it's something that we're talking a lot now about Wunderlist and really trying to figure out how we move forward. So I mean, in the last couple of years, we've seen sort of a huge shift from interfaces that are very graphical and to now interfaces that are a lot more hidden, with conversational interfaces, for example, or even VR AR, so virtual reality and augmented reality, even also experiences that with, like, for example, Internet of Things, so fridges and other smart devices. So we're really now asking ourselves, what does this mean for productivity? How can we stay ahead of the change curve and continue to really build great experiences with these new technologies that haven't really been built on yet? And of course, like, these chatbots and VR stuff has been around for a while, especially in pop culture and movies and television shows. You've seen sort of only conversational interfaces that could have an emotion, for example. Let's take conversational interfaces, for example. So it basically has no interface, really. The interface is text. You interact with it with text or with voice. So then we asked ourselves, if we were building this sort of experience, what would be the voice of Wunderlist? What would keep the voice consistent to also the look and feel of the product? So, like, moving, for example, from a chatbot to the watch app to the desktop app, what are the things that would ensure that the user feels like this is the same person I'm talking to, or this is the same app that I'm interacting with in all these different contexts? So we've always sort of thought about Wunderlist as a character, like a cartoon character, specifically Wall-E. And everyone knows Wall-E for its playful and friendly nature. But Wall-E is comprised of many different elements. It has a way of moving, a way of speaking, which is very unique. It has a way of looking and in terms of design. And all of these different characteristics, all these different elements actually work together to create this character that we know and we have somewhat of an emotional connection with. And it's the same for products, actually. Products have a certain way of looking, a certain way of feeling, and you can actually create an emotional connection between the product and your user. So we took Wunderlist and said, what is Wunderlist's, like, voice? How does it move? How does it speak? What is it like? And we sort of define Wunderlist as a companion, as a friend. He's playful, he's fun, optimistic in the way it moves, so it has that sort of a skip in his step. He sounds very encouraging and motivating with the sound design that we would use in the app. He looks beautiful, but also a little bit familiar, so bringing in the paper metaphor to try and invoke nostalgic emotions about growing up writing on pen and paper. So, like, defining all these different characteristic traits and helps us really understand the right context to put them in. So if we were building a chatbot, for example, we'd know we would have to heavily invest in the way Wunderlist sounds. So really figure out what are the voice, how does it sound? If we were building a VR app, for example, or even improving our iPhone app, it's more about the experience visually and what does it look like, what are the movements, what are the interactions. So defining all of these across the board helps us know that no matter where we are, the app will be consistent, it will be a great experience. Finally, like, VR and AR, I think, is the most exciting thing for us, at least for me personally, to try and really explore what the future has to offer. So this is all new to us. We haven't really had much time to play around with this. So we've seen a lot of tech demos, especially with HoloLens and the Oculus Rift and different devices like that. And I think for productivity, it's very interesting to see the space about how to bring productivity into a virtual space or even to an augmented space. And there's really cool ideas that we're playing around with at Wunderlist that are definitely for future times, which I guess I won't share so much now. But I think I'm excited, personally, just to really see where the industry takes these devices, takes these experiences, and actually how do they evolve, and actually even further, what will be the next step after augmented and virtual reality. Yeah, thank you. That's sort of... my talk. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Timothy.
Thank you.
I have a funny question, maybe.
Okay.
From the user experience perspective, what was the most difficult platform you have to target?
It's a good question. I think I would say the watch. I think the watch because I think about a year before the Apple Watch came out, there was like the Pebble, which was which had a very close connection with the phone, and you would answer calls, you would reply to text messages and stuff like that. But I think what the industry didn't really know yet was what these devices would be used for, what is their real purpose? I mean, I have an Apple Watch, and I don't use it more than just figuring out the weather, figuring out the time, and figuring out my next meeting. And so we initially built a very fully featured a client that sort of had like lists and tasks, and you could all have the detail, all this kind of stuff. And we thought this is what people would actually need. But I think more and more as we used the product, as we figured out how it worked and actually what the benefits were, it's more utility that helps make things around you a lot easier. So actually it's more about quick entry and quick sort of like contextual reminders. For example, if you're in a grocery store and it says, hey, you're at a grocery store, do you want to go there now and check off your list? So like more contextual experiences that we didn't get time to, explore at the beginning because we just wanted to figure out really how to build and how to use it. Yeah, I think that's probably the most challenging, but the most fun. I think it has a lot of potential still.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Now I'm switching to German because no wir sind jetzt am Ende angekommen. Ich hoffe, Ihnen hat das sehr viel Spaß gemacht, genauso wie mir und ich den Referenten, die hier bei mir gewesen sind, auch. Wir hatten zwischenzeitlich 1400 Teilnehmer, zeitgleich schauen, das halte ich für eine sehr, sehr große Zahl, bei knapp 2300 Registrierungen. Das hat mich sehr überrascht, dass es so in die Richtung ging. Das hilft uns vielleicht auch darüber nachzudenken, sowas zu wiederholen. Das ist für uns ja ein Testlauf gewesen. Auf jeden Fall eine sehr spannende Geschichte. Wir haben auch schon Fragen diesbezüglich, ob wir nochmal sowas ausrichten werden. Kann gut sein, das werden wir nicht heute entscheiden, auch wenn wir vielleicht danach später nochmal darüber diskutieren werden. Ich möchte mich bedanken bei allen Referenten. Timothy ist jetzt stellvertretend für die anderen hier. Ich möchte mich bei der Technik bedanken von Creacom, die einen tollen Job geleistet haben meines Erachtens hier. Ich möchte mich bedanken bei Harald Nikolaus von Xeneris, der für den ganzen Webauftritt zuständig gewesen ist. Bei Microsoft für die andernorts wichtige Unterstützung. Wir werden die Videos nächste Woche wahrscheinlich bereitstellen auf Channel 9. Zugleich werden wir auch die Slides zur Verfügung stellen. Ich werde das dann, da werden Sie eine Mail bekommen von mir, wo wir eben auf beides hinweisen werden. Wenn Sie Feedback haben zur Konferenz, ein bisschen haben wir schon was reinbekommen, gerne, ist wirklich willkommen. Das hilft uns sozusagen, sowas besser zu machen bei der erneuten Auflage oder bei einer anderen Auflage zu einem anderen Thema. Ansonsten wünsche ich Ihnen jetzt einen schönen Abend und maybe next year, maybe this year, oh, wie auch immer. Tschüss.
Tschüss.